Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Trad Cat Night Radio. I am Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Trad Cat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website worldwide, ranked number one in the world, ladies and gentlemen, by Alexa, top 30,000. You know we cover all the topics prevalent to our times as it relates to this culture of death, the system of death, the NWO taking over, trying to control everything. And we're going to stay within the realm of health today, and I have a very special guest with me today, an up-and-coming rising star. I'm going to pat him on the back here a little bit. He's going to be, you know, out and about now within the anti-GMO movement. I have with me Robert Schuller. Now, he is a Cornell University student slash activist countering massive propaganda and corruption right there at Cornell regarding GMO food and agriculture. He discovered that professors were colluding with Monsanto, promoting GM agriculture without pause and without respect for the truth. Hopefully we'll get a little bit into that pseudoscience aspect of it later. Now, Robert has decided to host an independent course on GMO agriculture backed by credible scientists and experts, which hopefully I can get onto the show here later down the road, to counter the university collusion and propaganda sponsored by Monsanto and the biotech industry. Now, his project is named GMOWTF. I will provide all this information right in the description box. You won't even have to look for it as it relates to his website and also one of his talks that can be found online from the past few weeks right there at Cornell, I believe it was. So he has a passion for sustainable agriculture, agroecology, nutritional healing, and is working on ending factory farming of animals worldwide. Just some of the things he's into. We're going to get to know Robert here a little bit. So let's start right there, Robert. Let's get to know you a little bit more, who you are, where you're coming from, your background, but then also, you know, the backdrop for your passion behind what you do and some of your findings. And then we'll, as a foundation, we'll lay that down and then we'll take it from there.
Right on. Thank you, Eric. Thanks so much for having me on. And thanks, everyone, for listening. I really appreciate the opportunity. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, I, as mentioned, I'm a Cornell University student. And that was a, growing up, I was a kind of an academic kid. And that was something very important to me, you know, doing well in school. And I always had college and in the forefront of my mind as a goal to get to a good university and study and do all that. And my parents supported me in that. And that led to an opportunity to attend Cornell University, which is, you know, the quote unquote most prestigious university that I got into. You know, obviously that doesn't mean too much to me anymore, but so I came to Cornell. I came from California, where I'm from, in the Bay Area, to Ithaca, New York, where Cornell is. And I did 2 years at Cornell, and the whole time I did not enjoy it at all, to be honest with you. I just was not inspired or happy, and I didn't like what I was studying and just didn't really connect well with the community, and it just felt very at odds with everything that I was supporting. And through that time, my health really deteriorated pretty rapidly over the course of those 2 years. And so I decided to take a leave of absence. Right before I took that leave of absence is when I became absolutely obsessed with studying nutrition and healing, because I wanted to figure out for myself, I wanted to get to the bottom of it and to really figure out why I was unwell and how to make myself well and really figure it out. And that led down this whole rabbit hole of studying nutritional healing, like I mentioned. And that kind of led to, well, the food thing, right? What are you going to eat? How are you going to eat? And then how that also leads to the question of how are we going to grow our food? And that's what really threw me into the whole GMO world. But more on that in a little bit. And basically, I ended up working for a man by the name of Gabriel Cousins, who's a medical doctor who runs the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center in Arizona, in Patagonia, Arizona. And I went and volunteered for him at first, and then I got hired onto his crew. And this guy is a fascinating figure, and hopefully I can have you interview him there. But he was just his main specialty is is dietary healing, and he was healing people of diabetes left and right. In a matter of days and weeks, like something that's supposedly medically impossible, but he was doing it, and he was documenting it. And he's a really interesting guy. He's someone that has his tentacles in all sorts of things. You know, he's a medical doctor. You know, he's kind of an interfaith guy. He's into spirituality and nutrition, and he's also really into agriculture. And that's when I started. And on his property, on his retreat center, he actually had a giant agroecological veganic farm, which is where I started to work. And they were cranking out all this food in the high desert with very low soil quality and low water. And I was just amazed that these guys were able to do this at such a profound level in the desert. You know, with all these. With no animal inputs, no chemical fertilizers, no industrial anything, it was pretty profound. And then he's kind of the first one to introduce me to the GMO debate, and that led me to do my own research over the next few years, and I'm really grateful for that experience. And then I eventually decided to come back to Cornell and re-enroll. And because I did a complete 180. I regained my health and my joy and happiness, and was just really on a track I was really proud of in life. And I came back to Cornell, with no expectations or no, I'm not limiting myself in any way. And I started to realize how absolutely beholden to Monsanto, Cornell University is, and I ended up sitting in on a class entitled "The GMO Debate," which is a multidisciplinary course at Cornell taught by four professors, and I sat in on this class because I wanted to know, I was like, what does Cornell have to say about GMOs? Is it going to be biased? Is it going to be accurate? And immediately I noticed, from day one onward, it was 100% pro GMO, 100% pro Monsanto. All the things we've heard before, we need GMOs to feed the world. GMOs are 100% safe. No one says they're not safe. If you're anti-GMO, you're a crazy anti-science nut job. All these things.
Oh, yeah.
So I was sitting there and just like, I was the only one in this this huge class challenging these guys. Everyone else was really eating it up, and I became known as that guy. But halfway through the course, my friend Jonathan Latham, who actually lives in Ithaca, and we had met during this time frame, and he runs independentsciencenews.org, and he published an article on there that basically showed someone put out a Freedom of Information Act release, which showed that all of my professors and several of the guest lecturers and even the dean of the agricultural school at Cornell were all emailing Monsanto. Without anyone knowing. Okay.
Wow.
So here I am sitting in this class and it's 100% pro GMO. It's completely illogical and unscientific in every way. And they're just promoting Monsanto and GMO agriculture, to the end. And halfway through the class we learn that these guys are actually emailing Monsanto without disclosing that information. And so that's when I really decided, okay, I have to do something about this. So I wrote my article, which is on my website, which I'm sure you're going to link to, and it was published on Jonathan's website, independentsciencenews.org, and then it got republished on gmwatch.org, which is another great resource, and then from there it just took fire, and basically I was documenting my experience and what I'm going to do about it, and it just took over on the internet. It got published about 2 months ago, and within 2 weeks after getting published, it had over 1 million reads online and shares.
Good.
And and I just got tons of all this email from all these professors and scientists and just regular people and farmers and everything, and just thanking me for doing this. And basically what I talk about in that article is, you know, my experience in this GMO debate course and how Cornell is really colluding with Monsanto in a very, very deep way, and how that's not a good thing. And then I described how my plan was to create an independent lecture series on GMOs to counterbalance the pro-GMO propaganda and rhetoric being espoused by Cornell.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to get into. Maybe we could just, you know, dive right into it. And when when Robert says he's that guy, quote unquote, trust me, I've been labeled that guy for probably different reasons. So in this world that we live in, that's actually a good thing when you're kind of sticking out like a sore thumb and not following like a sheep or a lemming with all these people who have professed degrees. And listen, I have, you know, 7 years of business school behind me, and I, to a certain level, agree with Robert. I mean, not that it didn't have any value, but it really was just a piece of paper to kind of get yourself in the door. And so, you know, I don't want to knock anyone going to college, but, you know, something to consider. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about just the GMO debate in general. You know, and kind of a follow-up question to that, you know, how were you received by your peers, and, you know, teachers in the school? Were you getting the eye? Were people rolling their eyes? I mean, were people supporting you? What was going on with that?
Well, I didn't know this when I first started out, but really I didn't realize how many of the kids and how many of the people in the agriculture school were connected to Monsanto and industrial agriculture, and so, you know, a lot of the by the time I took the course, a lot of the kids in the course were you know, everyone knew, except for me, because I had just got back into town, everyone knew that it was a pro-GMO course and that, you know, you weren't going to get a balanced view of that. So usually the people that took that course were already pro-GMO, just to kind of verify what they had already believed, essentially. So yeah, I was considered a nut job in that class. And there was, you know, like one of the girls in the class was her parents owned the largest GMO corn farm in Iowa, you know, and they were Monsanto's biggest customer in Iowa. So, you know, there's a huge bias there. And I just kept asking questions, and it was a little nerve-wracking because I knew that I was going against the grain in a major way. But then something else started to happen where once I got out of that little subset, the broader university community, especially when my article came out, I've had tons of support from professors and faculty members and students and graduate students and all these people who are really, you know, I would almost say that most people at Cornell don't approve of Monsanto being there to such a high degree, but everyone's just kind of scared to do anything about it because the professors might get fired, they might lose their tenure, things like that. So it really took someone like me, who really didn't have any stake in the whole thing, you know, to really kind of break it open. And that's kind of my, I realized that, I didn't realize it at the time, but I realize that now.
I'm taking a look at your schedule here for the fall season here. Again, this is a wonderfully laid out, structured program that you can find at gmowtf.com. And it looks like you've gotten through four of the talks already. It looks like Allison Wilson just talked, what was it, yesterday, and you're moving along here. And you've got a few more to go through. Maybe you can kind of just walk us through this chronologically. Obviously, we've gone through the current GMO paradigm at Cornell. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting topics here. History of chronic deception about GMO food, how GMOs are actually made. Maybe you can dive into a few of these subjects here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we just yesterday we had Allison Wilson, who's a senior scientist of the Bioscience Research Project, which is actually her and Jonathan Latham, who I mentioned, run that project, and they live in town. They're both geneticists and virologists. So we just finished our fourth week, and we have 11 weeks in total, so we have 7 to go. I did the first lecture, just kind of kicking it off, basically talking about what Cornell was up to and the evidence that I had amassed that they were really hosting a propaganda campaign. And then Stephen Drucker came and did two lectures, and I think your audience would really love to hear from him. He's a fascinating guy. He wrote a book called Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. And Jane Goodall, the famous scientist, wrote the foreword to that book. and she hailed it as one of the most important books of the last 50 years. And what the reason Steven Drucker is important is because he's a public interest attorney who sued the FDA on behalf of FDA's own internal scientists because, and if you read the book, you'll find this out, but not a lot of people know this, GMOs, genetically modified food, was put on the market illegally by the FDA in at odds with their own scientists who were warning of toxic effects on the environment and for human health. So they were essentially put on the market illegally. And Stephen documents this in his book with evidence. And he's challenged Monsanto to name one falsehood presented in that book. And they have yet they can't because everything he says is true. So those yeah. So he came and gave a lecture on how the GMO food venture is what he calls has been chronically dependent on deception. And what he means by that is, you know, if GMOs were so great, we wouldn't need to lie about them to put them on the market, and we wouldn't need to non-label them and all these things. But that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, and, see, it seems like money talks. There's a lot of lobbyists behind these.
Oh yeah,
these programs which are interconnected with some of these big schools. Just a side question. I don't mean to sidetrack it. We'll get back to this 11-part talk. Have you found that the other Ivy League schools are kind of connected in this little web too? Have you looked into that?
Yeah, there's definitely a connection to a lot of schools. The Ivy Leagues, definitely a couple of them. There's a couple of guys at Harvard and Princeton, for example, who are definitely known to be, you know, colluding with Monsanto and promoting that stuff. But Cornell in particular is the biggest offender because they're the only agriculturally focused land-grant Ivy League school, which makes them unique. And, you know, land-grant schools are agriculture schools. And they originally used to be a good thing where you know, land-grant universities were actually started by Abraham Lincoln and they led to massive increase in productivity of agriculture and you know, agricultural science really moved forward. But then, you know, really for the last few decades, the biotech industry and all these giant corporations have taken over the university, which is another bad thing. But yeah, Cornell is probably the biggest one, to be honest with you. And they're most proud of their Monsanto heritage. But there's other schools, non-Ivy League schools as well, like UC Berkeley and the whole UC system in California, University of Florida, Gainesville, University of Iowa. There's a lot more too, and it's almost the norm to assume that a school has some connection to these corporations rather than not to.
Yeah, that would only follow logic at this point.
Yeah.
Interesting talk coming up there is on October 12th. With Jonathan Latham talking about Roundup Ready crops. Maybe we could talk about that a little bit. I recently did a short piece on this where they're now finding, glyphosate, not only in the food, but now vaccines. It's just insane what's going on.
Yeah, glyphosate is, for those of you who don't know, most people have heard of Roundup, which is the chemical formulation where the active ingredient is the chemical glyphosate. And basically, the main application of genetically modified crops is what they call herbicide tolerance, which is where, and many of you have heard of this, where you grow a bunch of corn that's specially genetically modified to resist glyphosate and Roundup, which is manufactured by Monsanto, both the seeds and the glyphosate, and the farmers spray the glyphosate and the Roundup huge amounts of it onto these crops, and you know, obviously it kills everything but the corn, but then the glyphosate residue gets stuck in the corn, you know, and it has tons of ramifications for our health and for the ecosystem. So that's what Jonathan's going to talk about in particular the ecosystem, but there's also the health thing. And they just found the glyphosate is being found in vaccines, you know, which is really alarming because for two reasons. You know, number one, vaccines are injected into the bloodstream. They don't pass digestion, so that they're more, anything you inject in your body is more toxic than anything you ingest, right? And the other thing is, you know, glyphosate is a potent endocrine disruptor, right? Which means it messes with your hormones. at very, very, very low levels of, so you could have parts per million, parts per billion, even parts per trillion, they're finding, of glyphosate, and it will wreak havoc on your endocrine system, your hormone system. And what that means is it can translate into cancer, into other things. And most honest scientists admit that there is a cancer connection between Roundup and glyphosate and cancer rates in the population.
I don't know if
So
you
yeah.
saw this too, Robert. The last couple of weeks I've been reporting upon this. I usually do a very thorough scan on a nightly basis. I go through hundreds of websites, and obviously we tackle the health issues too. They're now finding metal pieces and even chemicals in granola bars and even cereal now. I mean, it's just, well, I mean, where does the madness stop? What area won't they touch?
Well, the madness stops when well, you we can end the madness individually in our own lives. For me, for example, it's and all you have to do is eat whole foods, organically grown in nature, that you can recognize or processed foods from people you trust. Like, there are cereal brands without what you mentioned, I'm sure, that are, good from good companies and things. But yeah, to put our faith into industrial agriculture and, corporate food systems is a sure sign that we're going to not be having the best health down the line.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's education, it's awareness, but we also have to go out there and actually take action and then start doing something about this. I know on your website it mentioned you want to raise some money, 5.6 million. A specific, maybe you could talk about that a little bit, but a specific question that I know a lot of people would want to ask you is, where do you shop? I mean, should we be doing Whole Foods? Talk about reading labels maybe too. What should we be looking for even?
Sure. Yeah. Well, just really quickly on the $5.6 million thing, and I'm just starting that fundraising campaign rigorously. But if anyone wants to contribute, we do have some costs for this course, like hiring cameraman and all these basic things. You can donate on the website right now just to help with the cause. But we are going to start a nonprofit and really raise this $5.6 million. The reason we chose that amount of money is because that's the amount of money that Bill Gates, who's a big Monsanto supporter, gave Cornell to promote GMOs on campus, and in that exact amount. So we're going to raise the exact same amount to defeat that, essentially, is what we want to do. Yeah, but so where to shop and what to eat and all these things. Well, a good step is obviously to go as organic as you can, and especially when it comes to things like animal products.
Go ahead, you there?
Are you there? Okay.
Go ahead. Now I lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay.
Now we're
Yeah.
good.
So yeah, a good first step is to go organic, and going organic doesn't guarantee, like, there are problems with big organic agriculture. There is such a thing as industrial organic agriculture. It's still better than the other side, but yeah, shopping at farmers markets is great. Local co-ops, that's what I do here. There's a great co-op in Ithaca that everyone shops, at Green Star is what it's called. And yeah, just go as local as you can, as organic as you can. And I'm gonna add, for me, and this is something that I feel is important. Vegetarianism is something that I've embraced over the last couple of years that's really helped me out. And
So no Taco Bell for you, Robert?
no, yeah, not for a while. Yeah, I definitely used to, but yeah, the thing that's and I have no judgments against, I have tons of friends who eat organic animal products and meat and dairy and things, and and we're all part of this movement together, right? But the reason I like vegetarianism is because, well, for a couple of reasons. Number one is vegetarian diets are low on the food chain, which means they don't accumulate toxins as much. So you can have organic meat and dairy that's actually pretty highly toxic in today's world, which is a real bummer. And you can eliminate that risk by just eating vegetarian foods. Number two is, we have an ecological crisis that our species is facing, right? With environmental destruction and, habitat loss and species extinction and all these things. And the number one way to ameliorate that is to, you know, the lowest impact diet that we can eat is vegetarian. And it, you know, it takes the least amount of land, the least amount of water, resources, everything. You know, and we're right now, we're clear-cutting the Brazilian rainforest upwards of 90% just to make room for either cows or genetically modified soybeans to feed the cows. And we can, you know, obviously we can eliminate that. Now, you know, the number one thing is, you know, if you don't make this a black and white issue, you know, if you don't want to go vegetarian right away, just consider cutting back on the meat and dairy as much as you can and replacing that with more vegetarian foods. And, but for me, I've been doing it all the way for several years now, and there's lots of other people doing it too. And it's, you know, it's really, there's athletes and, you know, world record holders and all sorts of people living a very long time on vegetarian diets. And so, yeah, that's what I would say. Just shop local, farmers markets, co-ops, organic as much as possible, local as much as possible. And then if you're ready to make the leap, choose the vegetarian options more, the plant-based.
Now, are you finding, Robert, I'm gonna ask you this question. Is there kind of a crossover between the prepper community and the organic community? I mean, one of the things, you know, we've been talking about, warning about, is a potential economic collapse. We see a lot of instability in the world. Mm. Many people are, you know, fearing a, you know, race war, you know, all this, all kind of nonsense that's going on in the world. And there's kind of a move to going back onto the land. And so I'm finding that a lot of people are actually buying land off to the sides, getting their heirloom seeds, and just doing their own thing, kind of just running, you know, just farming themselves as best as they can. Do you kind of find in your circle there's a crossover between the crazy preppers and or, you know, the
organic? Well, I'm sure you one of the resources you check out and your readers too, probably some overlap with, you know, naturalnews.com with Mike Adams, and obviously he's a big leader in that, you know, and I have a lot of respect for him. So I find not only is it beneficial, it's, you know, it's good security to get land and save food, save seeds and everything, but that's where our society is headed in general. You know, the resilience of society is not going to come from reliance on giant multinational corporations, you know, Wall Street, you know, stock exchange, government, things like that. It's going to come from people banding together in small groups and taking care of each other and really creating resilience. So those two go hand in hand. And I think we can have a system. We can, you know, once we mature and, like you said, embrace the culture of life, we can have a system where, you know, we do have structures in place. We do have banks, we do have governments and things like that, but they're not going to look like what they look like today. You know, we need to break it down to build it back up again.
Here's an interesting thing, Robert. You know, one of the things we keep an eye on, as traditional Catholics, is there's kind of a long-awaited prophecy where Russia is basically going to have a resurgence into implementing this